KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
When I was doing Okja Press in Korea, a show asked me who I'd want to work with here, and I mentioned Lee Chang-dong, and they're like, oh, never thinking that I'd ever get to work with him because he does full Korean language films. Like, I was like, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm just admire him. And then I got a phone call. And the strangest part was he was like, can you come to Korea anytime soon? And I was like, I'm actually headed to Korea tomorrow.
You may know Steven Yeun from the Netflix movie Okja or AMC's The Walking Dead. In the new Korean language film Burning, he plays Ben, a mysterious, well-to-do outsider who may or may not have a habit of setting things on fire. Today we look at the moody movie Burning from two perspectives. Director Lee Chang-dong tells us, with the help of a translator, why and how he made the transition from writing novels to making films when he was in his 40s. He also talks about why, despite its rich cinematic history, Korea has never had a film nominated for Oscar. Burning is the first Korean picture ever to make it onto the shortlist for Best Foreign Language Film, but it didn't make the final cut. Then actor Steven Yeun, who played Glenn on The Walking Dead, tells us how he found himself at a crossroads once his character met his end. And he talks about speaking Korean like a native in Burning, despite having grown up in the United States. But first on the News Banter, a Burning expose on Bryan Singer. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
Well, so Hollywood is certainly going to be talking for some while about Bryan Singer. Of course, The Atlantic came out with this article, Long a Burning. We thought it was going to run in Esquire in August, but it did not run in Esquire in August. Obviously, there were all kinds of threats associated with this from high-priced lawyers. I think we can be confident about that. But The Atlantic went ahead and published. These are allegations, at least one on the record and others under an alias of rape, an assault of underage boys. These are the kinds of allegations that have dogged Bryan Singer literally for years. We have taken many swings at trying to report these, not just me, others on our staff, others at other publications. It's been a really tough story to break. These guys who did it for The Atlantic say it took them a year, which doesn't surprise me at all. It surprises me that they got it finally, and good for them. But, you know, we know he was hired on Bohemian Rhapsody before it came to Fox, and Fox decision was either to make it with him or not make it at all. It made a fortune. Fox, you know, it's been published and reported by us that Stacey Snyder, the chairman of Fox, admonished him beforehand not to do anything illegal, gave him a good talking to. But, you know, Hollywood was still doing business with Bryan Singer.
And Hollywood was still doing business with him after the specter of this story was known throughout the industry. I mean, he signed on to do a Red Sonja movie at Millennium. And this was when we all knew that the Esquire, now Atlantic, story was in the works because Bryan Singer put out a statement denying the story before it even came out. And we should say he's denied the allegations in this news story. He called them homophobic. The Bryan Singer situation is a very interesting one because a lot of these rumors and claims and things that people had heard were known for many years. And about 4 or 5 years ago, he was actually sued by a man who claimed that he was assaulted by Bryan Singer. And all the allegations were centered around this company called Den. And that was a pre-first internet boom company that was run by a CEO who later pled guilty to sexual assault and is now a registered sex offender. There was a mansion associated with that company, and Bryan Singer was a frequenter at that mansion. There were all kinds of things that were alleged to have gone on there with underage boys and parties with young men.
Drugs, sexual assault, the whole thing.
So when that lawsuit came about, it was very well reported on at the time, but that case kind of fell apart because there were a lot of inconsistencies with this particular plaintiff's allegations. And because of that, Bryan Singer was able to claim that, oh, this has been litigated, it was dismissed, I've been exonerated. And people didn't really pursue a lot of these claims after the Harvey Weinstein allegations came forward because it had sort of been already done and people had moved on. And now that's not the case.
I mean, I would say we actually did expect after the Harvey Weinstein allegations came forward to get Brian Singer allegations. And we're really surprised that none came forward. I mean, there was quite a culture of secrecy around Brian Singer. And these things, we knew they were out there, yet we couldn't get them. I would say that this business with that lawsuit, he was not the only person named in that lawsuit. And some other accusers have come forward against other men who were named in that lawsuit. And this guy's inconsistencies, and he had problems in his past that were, of course, brought to light. Because when you bring an accusation against a powerful, wealthy man like Brian Singer, you will have private investigators on you for sure, and they will look for anything to use against you. And guess what? As this article points out, when you're the victim of an assault or abuse, you may very well develop some emotional problems, drug problems. So they will then turn around and use these problems to say you're not credible. It's one of the many problems that confronts accusers when they come forward. And up against that, you have, of course, the allure of Hollywood, money, power, glamour, all the things that a guy like Brian Singer could open the door to. And some of these young men are not from advantaged backgrounds. So you can see how you would think, wow, this is the greatest, you know, thing of my life. But those den parties in Encino that you referred to were notorious. And Brian Singer had quite a reputation for an affinity for young guys. The question now is would any talent work with him? I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody made an astounding amount of money and is in the Oscar race. Does anyone want to work with Brian Singer? That's, you know, Hollywood, the culture resists change. But with these allegations, do we expect any?
I actually do. I think this story is pretty definitive in its investigation of these allegations. And I do think there will be some backlash. Maybe I'm naive here. The question, I know it's a trivial one when discussing these serious issues, but I wonder if there's going to be any impact on Bohemian Rhapsody in the Oscar race, because Brian Singer had sort of been swept under the rug and not discussed in the Oscar campaign.
True.
And, you know, the producers took center stage, Rami Malek took center stage, and Fox really successfully dodged that bullet during the release of the movie and the campaign. But now it's hard to ignore this. And I just wonder if it doesn't kill its Oscar chances.
I think it absolutely does. But let me turn quickly to the Oscars, because, of course, we'll talk more about this going forward. But big breakthrough year for Netflix with Roma, 10 nominations, which is as much as anybody got. Fox Searchlight's The Favorite got as many. And here is Netflix, which has gradually been sort of converging slowly with Hollywood, despite this war over releases and theaters and windows and all of this, joining the Motion Picture Association of America.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that the news of Netflix joining the MPAA, which is a huge deal. There are only 6 studios in the MPAA. Now there are 7, although Fox is going to go away when it merges with Disney. But Netflix joining the MPAA is a major deal and a sign of Netflix joining the establishment. And the news breaks the exact same day that Netflix gets its first Best Picture nomination for Roma, which is its big announcement to Hollywood. We are here. We are just like the other studios. We are making movies that matter.
There are many breakthroughs, some of which were very good. You know, a diverse field. Women could have, you know, been better represented. And that is something that I hope will change going forward. A lot of firsts. First African-American production designer for Black Panther. First indigenous woman for Roma. And of course, Spike Lee got his first nomination in a major category for director, finally. And, you know, we see change and yet resistance to change in this field of nominations.
Yeah, it does seem like this is the product of 2 academies. There is this new, younger, more diverse, more global academy that favored Roma and probably gave the nod to Black Panther. Then there are the more traditional Oscar movies like Green Book and A Star is Born that the more traditional old guard academy members can get behind. So we'll see which one wins on Oscar night.
Yes, we will. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The new Korean movie Burning is a thriller with layer upon layer of mystery. Well-known Korean actor Yoo Ah-in plays Jong-soo, a recent university graduate who dreams of becoming a writer while working as a delivery boy. He runs into Hae-mi, played by newcomer Jung Jeon-so. Though he doesn't recognize her right away, she insists they went to elementary school together and says she looks different because she's had plastic surgery. They start becoming close, but then Hae-mi heads off on a trip to Africa. She returns accompanied by Ben, a handsome, rich, and mysterious young man who she's met on her travels. Ben, played by Korean-American actor Steven Yeun, invites both of them to a meal at his elegant apartment, where the wary and literary-minded Jong-soo points out to Hae-mi that her new friend Ben has a lot in common with the Great Gatsby. The fancy car, the expensive clothes, the opaque past.
What are you doing?
무슨 말이야?
뭐 하는지는 모르겠는데 돈은 많은 수수께끼의 젊은 사람들.
The director of Burning is Lee Chang-dong, who before he started making acclaimed films in the late 1990s, was an acclaimed novelist in Korea. Burning is his sixth feature film. I read somewhere that you said that Burning is the least commercial film that you've made. I mean, there's a very vibrant South Korean film industry, and you feel the same pressures maybe that most people do in the film business to generate box office returns.
Ever since I made my first feature film, I think I have been working within the commercial industry of a film medium. So definitely I have a pressure over the box office result of my film. And as for Burning, on the surface, it looks like a kind of mystery thriller genre movie, but at the same time, it's very unique. So if some audience expect something very conventional, they may be either frustrated or maybe embarrassed. So it has this certain commercial danger. And not only in Korea, but all over the world, I think that the films, commercial films, tend to be easier and simpler. And for some reason, I want to go against the grain of this trend. So when the audience come to see this film in the theater, I want to give them the new cinematic experience, and at the same time, I ask them to raise questions about the world as we live now in, and also their lives, so they will raise these questions after watching the film.
Of course, you do have many thoughts and questions after you watch the film, but does it make it more difficult when you're aspiring to do this challenging type of film to finance the film?
사실상 이런 어떤 의미에서 좀 도전적인 영화는
Actually, this kind of challenging film is getting more and more difficult to get financed. But in Korean film industry, which are more vibrant than many other countries, we still have room for this kind of adventurous film. And obviously, there is always commercial pressure. And maybe for younger generation of filmmakers, it may be even more difficult. But I have experienced a couple of times to take the risk. So maybe I imagine some investors may be willing to take the risk again, maybe just a couple of more times.
You were an author. How did you transition? How do you get people to trust you to make a film? You were how old when you first made your first film?
I was 42 years old when I made my first feature film.
제가 그... 설명하기가 좀
Well, this is a little bit embarrassing for me to answer myself. But I have a friend of mine, the film director, whose name is Park Kwang-soo. And I worked with him as a screenwriter and also one of the assistant directors. And I need to have a new experience in my life. And so I worked very hard. So people kind of observed me working very hard on the set. And some people encouraged me to become a film director, and they said, you work so hard, so you deserve to be a filmmaker, and is there anything we can help? So it was a real privilege because I could cast some of the top stars in Korea. It is hard to cast, and also I could work with one of the best cinematographers in the industry, and all the staffs, producers, they all helped me in one way or another. So in a word, I was lucky.
Well, I know you're a very esteemed author. In terms of the casting, so Steven Yeun is obviously very well known in the States. Probably not. Well, I don't know. Is Walking Dead a thing in Korea?
Well, yes, it's very popular among young generation of audience.
So he's known in both places.
Yes.
Tell me about bringing him in. He came in the United States at 2 years old, I think. So, but he speaks fluently enough that his Korean doesn't have an accent.
His Korean dialogue in the film as a Ben are perfect. Perfect Korean.
다만 아주
But the two Korean ears, so to speak, Ben's Korean is slightly strange. So this added to the mystery of the character
right.
Steve Yeun is playing.
Maybe he came from somewhere else or was educated somewhere else. There's something about him.
But it's not exactly Korean-American or something.
Right. You don't just hear it and say, oh, he's that American guy. No. Right. Yeah.
교포처럼 비춰지는 건 원치 않았어요.
I didn't want to make Steve Yeun sound like Korean-American because then the
right.
character may be too decisive or limited.
Right.
For example, in the film, when he pronounced William Faulkner, instead of saying Faulkner, he said Faulkner, which is a more Korean way.
They're discussing the literature within the film, yes.
Right, but mm-hmm. they speak, all these names are pronounced as if Koreans do,
right.
not as Korean-Americans or Americans do.
그 스티븐 연은 뭐 실제 일상적으로 대화할
In everyday life, the real Steven Yeun cannot speak Korean so fluently.
Ah.
But in the film, he speaks a perfect Korean after a lot of practice.
What an actor.
When I first met Steven Yeun, the impression I got from the conversation is that although his mastery of Korean language is not very good, but his pronunciation was very good. And it's almost like the common Korean's pronunciation. And perhaps this is because while he was growing up, he listened to his Korean parents speaking to each other, so he sort of acquired the ear for Korean pronunciation in a very correct way. So he has this memory of all this Korean language. And although his Korean language is not very fluent, but in the dialogue, in the script, there are a lot of different, very subtle nuances, and he could understand them perfectly and could express them. So he has a very sensitive actor and has a very good sensibility. And without this sensibility, I don't think that he can play the role. It is almost impossible.
Right. He's a good mimic is what he is. Is Ben even a real common name in Korea?
한국에서 요즘은
Well, Ben is an American name, and for many different reasons, nowadays, it is not uncommon for Koreans to adapt American name in Korea right now. But in the film, it is not clear why this character has the American name Ben, and it's part of the mystery of the character.
Right, right. So this is the third film you made that's Korea's Oscar submission. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And there's never been a Korean film. It's a despite the great South Korean film industry, there's never been a single film to make a shortlist. We don't know why.
한국 영화가 한 근래 한 10년, 20년 동안
In fact, for the past two decades at least, Korean films drew a lot of attention from all over the world, including America. So there are many cinephiles who are interested in Korean film and the fans of Korean films. So if you consider all these facts, it is kind of surprising that the Korean films have never gotten shortlist, not to speak of nomination. So the pride of the Korean film industry is hurt by this fact. So it's very pressing on me.
그 이유는 뭐 저도 정확히는 알기 어려우나.
Well, I cannot tell exactly why there has never been a nomination of Korean films for this Oscar category. But, well, in principle, I think that those films which were submitted before could not really satisfy the taste or the criterion of the Academy members. And so this is kind of commonsensical interpretation, I think. But on top of that, I kind of feel that it's not only the film's merit in itself, but also many external factors which will affect this nomination. So that may be the part of the reason.
Maybe that's it. Lee Chang-dong is the director of Burning. Translation was provided by Kim Hong-jun. Thank you, gentlemen, both so much for coming in.
네, 고맙습니다. 이렇게.
Thank you for inviting me and listening to my story.
Coming up after a short break, Steven Yeun says his Korean accent was perfect. Okay, he agrees with Lee Chang-dong. It needed some work. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking about Burning, the first Korean film ever to be on the shortlist for Oscar in the Best Foreign Language category. Nope, it didn't make the final cut. Maybe because Roma double-dipped? Korean-American actor Steven Yeun of Walking Dead fame makes his Korean language film debut as Ben, a smooth-talking, well-to-do young man who may or may not be as friendly as he seems. During a visit to the rundown rural childhood home of his new acquaintance, Jong-soo, played by Yoo Ah-in, Ben claims that every couple of months, he likes to burn down an abandoned greenhouse because these acts of arson make him feel alive.
난 비닐하우스를 태우는 취미가 있어요. 들판에 버려진 낡은 비닐하우스 하나를 골라 태우는 거예요. 두 달에 한 번쯤? 그 정도 페이스가 제일 좋은 것 같아요.
Whether Ben is telling the truth is one of the central mysteries of Burning. Before playing the mysterious Ben, Steven Yeun worked with Korean director Bong Joon-ho on the Netflix film Okja. But he played a Korean-American in that role. In Burning, Ben seems to be a native Korean. Having grown up in the States, Yeun had some work to do to get the dialogue just right. Though Ben wouldn't seem to have much in common with Steven Yeun's character in The Walking Dead, Yeun says playing the zombie-fighting Glenn set him up perfectly for this most recent role.
I find myself in a very unique position to have been on that show that allowed me to have a bit of notoriety that could be used in Korean cinema as well to kind of play these characters that they could never maybe fully express prior because they didn't have the American-Korean there to deliver on that. So I felt like...
The American-Korean has permission to do what the Korean-Korean maybe cannot socially do.
Sure. Or even just have the understanding of it to play that person in a real way. So that's kind of what Director Lee definitely talked to me about. You know, he definitely said that we're going to use the fact that you're from the West to be part of this character. And it doesn't mean that Ben is from the West.
No,
it just means
it's
that
a
Ben
sort
is,
of a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a man with no country.
An ineffable quality of otherness, I guess is how I would say.
Yes, yes.
But how did you come to get the role of Ben?
Well, how I came to get the role of Ben is just bonkers. I was tossing and turning in one night in London, and I got a phone call from Director Bong saying that Director Lee wanted to meet with me. And I was so confused because he's one of my heroes. Both of them are my heroes. But
you were on the director circuit now.
Yeah, I guess. When I was doing Okja Press in Korea, a show asked me who I'd want to work with here. And I mentioned Lee Chang-dong. And they're like, oh, never thinking that I'd ever get to work with him because he does full Korean language films. Like, I was like, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm just admire him.
Right.
And then I got a phone call. And the strangest part was he was like, can you come to Korea anytime soon? And I was like, I'm actually headed to Korea tomorrow. And
well,
so I was already headed there. And so I went there and I met him for 3 days. And he didn't even hand me the script yet because the translation of the script hadn't been finished. Because they didn't have a reason to have it translated prior.
Right.
And so we just talked about the character. And I don't know, there was a lot of things happening in my life at that time where I felt like I really understood Ben. Not from a place of like, oh, this is, I am Ben, but more like...
No, let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Based on what I told you previously, but I won't say it now, what I think of Ben. Yes.
Yeah. But more like I could see what drives someone to that place. I could see the thing that might manifest in his thought process that might take him to a place like that, where he inhabits a reality and a maybe an emptiness that then inhabits that I wasn't necessarily going through, but I was like, yeah, I understand that. And
this sort of sense of aloneness, maybe.
Yeah, just deep. I think what was happening for me, and this is personal, but after I left the show, you know, I had just gotten married, we had bought a house, and we were about to have a child. And I was sitting in my kitchen one night with my pregnant wife, and I was just like, I don't know why right now, but I feel incredibly alone. And she said, through her wisdom, which she has a lot of, and luckily she didn't take it poorly.
Yes, I can see that possibility.
Yeah. That's how much better she is than me. But she was just like, have you ever considered that this is the first time that you're not part of a collective? And I was like, whoa, and my brain exploded because it was me flashing back to being Korean, being raised in a very Christian household, being raised in a private liberal arts school, and then going to Second City. And there was team after team after team after team, and then Walking Dead, another team. And I got very lucky that I didn't have too many moments where I had to face a chaotic reality or a future that was completely blank. Instead, I was always told what was coming next. And in that moment, I was like, oh, the future is up to me. And that flipped the switch for me. And I simultaneously felt the emptiness of being alone in this life and the power of being alone in this life. And that was really, I think, came around the time that Director Lee asked me to play Ben.
There was Ben.
Yeah.
So Director Lee kind of said, Stephen, his Korean is very good, but not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's not an uh-oh.
He was like, so.
I think where the not very good came from was an uncomfort with the language, meaning I knew the right words. I knew how to say it. I knew how to say it naturally, but I didn't know how to say it without an affectation of a feeling that I was apologizing for speaking it. And then that took time. So immersing myself into Korea during that phase, and luckily the character brought me there, which is like, this character speaks Korean flawlessly. And so then I was like, okay.
It's like you have to speak unaccented Korean, which
I
think he sort of described it almost as a kind of mimicry almost.
There was moments of mimicry where he had to tell me the inflection that was proper, and it was minutia.
Right.
It was so subtle. And luckily also Director Lee is a language professor.
Is he?
Yeah.
He is a man of parts, this
genius,
guy.
Genius. But, you know, he guided me through the whole process. And those are the minutia. But what I think what really turned it for me was when I realized that I could just speak as if I'd always been speaking Korean. Because there's this way of speaking Korean that you're taught when you're younger, especially if you're an immigrant, where you talk to your elders a specific way. You don't only put on the proper language to talk to them, which is the honorific versions of things, but also you put on this affectation of just like, oh, hello, how are you? It's so nice to
deferential,
see you.
Kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you had to eliminate that to just be like, hey, how are you doing? Relax. It's okay. You can speak Korean, you know.
Jong-soo is this character who's from a disadvantaged background, mm-hmm. a rather grim background, really. And you use, this is lost on American audiences, including obviously me, mm-hmm. and lost, truly lost in translation. Mm-hmm. With that character, you use this honorific, but I guess it would play as very patronizing.
It could be, because there are moments when Ben would selectively choose when to speak to him on the same level and when to speak to him in an honorific way.
When we're, yes.
And those were very key moments. So
a little frustrating as a non-Korean speaker.
Yeah, that's definitely stuff that's lost,
like
that's
for
sure.
I wish they could like change the color of this text or something, cue me to the fact that he's changing his
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Tone, yeah.
That's the beauty of international global cinema.
You get some, but not necessarily
exactly, yeah,
get it
yeah.
all. Actor Stephen Yeun is one of the stars of the new film Burning. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Paul Smith. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.